I'm John Wilson. Welcome to Owned and Operated. Twice a week, we talk about home service businesses. And if you're a home service entrepreneur, then this is going to be the show for you. We talk about our own business in residential plumbing, HVAC, and electric. And we also talk about business models that we just find interesting. Let's get into it. If you like what we talk about on our social media, on Twitter, on this podcast, then you should be signed up for our newsletter. Go to ownedandoperated.com, where every Friday we break down our business, we break down insights, things we're learning, things we're working on, and it's good stuff. Check it out, ownedandoperated.com. Thanks for checking out Owned and Operated. Today, Jack and I just have a very meandering conversation where we talk about why our goal is $100 million, how we think we're going to get there, what the potential constraints are. It's a fun conversation, and I think it'll help people. Welcome back to Owned and Operated.
Welcome back to Owned and Operated.
Welcome back.
I'm so excited.
He's excited. He's got a chainsaw behind his head just for this episode, ready to rock in that garage.
So it's garage sesh because I got kicked out of my office.
Yep.
Because I have family staying over. So we are recording in my garage. I put on my plaid lumberjack outfit and we're rocking.
Yeah, dude. You're ready to go. I'm in the exact same room I'm normally in, but the camera is turned the opposite way and it's a horrible mistake. So if you're watching this on YouTube, I'm really sorry about my lighting. We're working to do better. All right, dude. How's it going? How's the integration? How's your deal?
I mean, first off, do you want to talk about the workshop?
Oh my God. Yeah. That was amazing. I still have to send a thread about it just because it was so much fun. It was awesome.
It's really cool. Like today we got tagged. It's been about a week and a half maybe since, or maybe a week.
It's been 6 days.
Yeah. It's been 6 days and we are already getting messages like, hey, I've already started implementing this and I've already started, like, if that's you out there, congrats guys. You guys are killing it. I'm so excited. And even me, like I've been implementing some of the stuff that we talked about that even I don't have ready to go in that. And it's been just wild. I had so much fun though.
My one goal was to make friends. And I feel like I did that. I had a lot of fun. It's been a while since I've been to like an SMB Twitter event. One of the funnier things that I forget is people will quote you back to you. That was funny. Meeting a bunch of new people was fun. We had some old friends there that I've met a few times. That was fun. But no, it was great. Like it was a really good and the group was awesome, especially for the first one. So I feel like we got really spoiled. And then we have some folks coming back for the next one, like different people of their teams. Yeah, we're pumped. And if you are listening and you attended, I'm super grateful. I'm glad you made the trip and I'm glad that you took time out of your day and your week and spent it with us. And all the feedback so far has been, it's really been good, but you know, time will tell. I want to see people's businesses grow.
Rehashed a few episodes. If you've been listening and you saw those old episodes pop up.
Yeah.
It's really neat to go back and listen. I listened to two of them and people 2 years ago, we were in such different spots than they are now.
Yeah. Cassie was at the workshop and we just did her episode. And like when she bought it was like 700,000 in sales. And like right now she's like 3+ million. Working to get over 5, and that was like 2 years ago. And then Rich was like 800, but he bought it a longer time ago than Cassie. And like he's trying to get over 18 right now. I got to have him back on here. It's wild to watch the journey.
Even thinking back when we started, I was recording out of the
the
roll-up storage container because I didn't have an office. And now 6 months later, we went from an $800,000 business to 3+ million.
Yeah.
And we're going to close on another business. And so like in less than a year from sub 1 million, 5 million and break every system that we have in the process. So super fun.
Sounds like fun. I have to re-kick or like re-listen to some of my original interviews. I have been cautious to do that, but I have an interview from late 2020, early 21 with Service Titan. And the big problem that I was trying to solve was like breaking 5 million, which is cool. Like that's a big problem.
Yeah.
It is. And I'm not trying to like discredit that. It's more just holy smokes. Like for perspective, we're wrapping up quarter one this week. And I'm pretty sure we did 5 million this quarter.
Insane. Speaking of that, how did you come out of quarter one? I know quarter one's generally a difficult quarter for everybody in the home service industry.
Yes. I've only exited quarter one profitable twice in my life, and I'm living the second one right now. That is a big one. And something that has never happened to me is I have never done more revenue in quarter one than I did in quarter four until right now. So that was wild. We're going to pass quarter four's numbers, which is usually like quarter three is our strongest quarter. Quarter four is our next strongest. And something that Brandon and I keep saying to ourselves, because quarter one's tough. Like it is, you know, I'm painting a rosy picture because we've performed really well, but like it was very challenging. One of the most challenging of my career, not even one of the most challenging of my career, not close, but we did it, which is really cool. But, you know, February was like a down month, like it always is. So January, we had we set a record revenue month. February was down, always is down, not a big shock, but like we really felt it. But like we broke even still, which is amazing. I normally lose so much money in February. And like Brandon and I are just now doing like a post-mortem on quarter one. We're not even done, but we're sort of like, okay, what just happened? And like we felt down about February, but we did as much revenue in February as we did in September and October, like a few months ago. I was like really bummed about February. And then I look backwards and I'm like, hold on, like October and September were huge wins. And I did the same number. Like, that's insane. So yeah, really big ride. If you've been listening to the show for 6 months, you've probably heard the ride. We're growing like crazy. We're up 72% year over year. It is a lot to manage.
Especially your size, like 72% year over year at 1 million. Like, congrats, it's still a big deal. But when you talk about that scale at... It becomes a beast.
It's a beast. It takes every department firing as close to all cylinders as you can get, which like you really start to see the big gaps in skill, like leadership depth, really all the big challenges really shine when you're growing at that pace organically.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, it's been a crazy quarter. But yeah, we beat quarter four by 2%. Which normally it's a 20% drop. So beating it by 2% is pretty unreal for us.
And then now we're going into kind of the busy season, the busy quarters.
Yeah. So it's like quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, and then quarter four. So quarter two is okay for us. April is usually a bit of a fight.
April's a fight, but May really pops, at least historically in our business. So it will be interesting to see because, I mean, that's a huge jump, right? You did so well in Q1 that when Q2 hits and Q3 hits, if that kind of trajectory continues,
yeah,
I think you're going to surprise yourself, hopefully.
I mean, we think so too, because like the gap between January and February was only like 200,000, and we're half of that back in March. So like March was already like a climb. But you know what we've really struggled with in March, much more than the other months, is our 3-day call board. We've really struggled to keep that thing maxed out, which up until March, we had really dialed in. And I'm going back to like, this was the toughest first quarter of my career. We had to fight, you know, a lot of stuff that we've talked about on this show has been new for our business. We've never tried it before, like the outbounds, a lot of different lead gen things. And we're still constantly trying and doing all that. And this was the first year for most of this stuff. We're 7 or 8 months into having a marketing department, and a lot of the stuff that we talk about here every day, brand new capabilities for us. And I really don't know how we would have gotten through this first quarter if we didn't have those things. We would have gotten through it, but it would have been like 50, 60% revenue drops instead of we're eking out with a revenue gain, which has never happened. But like March has been a real struggle. So despite doing more revenue than February, we've struggled to keep the board full. But we've been better at maximizing the board throughout March. So that's a good thing. But we really struggled to keep the board full in March.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that continues.
We have a lot of stuff that I don't know that I'm totally ready to talk about. But we have a lot of stuff going into April that we're not expecting that trend to continue. I'm usually right. So yeah. I suspect I'll be right.
I mean, you change your marketing strategy too, going into the, at least from an HVAC side.
Yeah.
I mean, so a lot of this is new for me on plumbing, but strangely enough, it kind of corresponds. Plumbing does a little bit more linear, but I mean, still, it'll be interesting to see because I know a little bit behind the scenes of what you are implementing. And so we'll see if they actually part, you know, if it actually drives value and drives leads and keeps you going. Really cool stuff. Anything else crazy going on end of Q1?
One, holy smokes, most challenging quarter of my career. And it wasn't close. And I think that's a combination of personal and professional. Like I had some personal stuff going on at the beginning of the quarter.
Yeah.
And that didn't help. And I say this to Brandon almost every day as we think about how hard we are pushing every day right now. We can't believe that we used to just take quarter one to the chin. It's astonishing to us. But it's also like we earned every inch of our 70% year over year. We earned every inch of that.
And I mean, we saw it during the workshop. Your team appreciates that too. Like I saw they're all high-fiving when they made the sale. They sold the tankless or a water heater. Everyone's giving each other high-fives and knuckles. And it's truly a cultural thing, like based on how you designed your business, that it all moves in the same direction. Because I was talking to my team about this today. I said, you know, when you run across these businesses that are legacy that run everybody on hourly, that's fine. That's your pay structure is hourly. That's a business decision you made. But that plumber, that HVAC, that electrical guy, he doesn't care that the business went from 2 million to 3 million or 3 million to 8 million because he just worked his 40, maybe some OT, and he goes home. Like he doesn't care. But when the business goes from 3 million to 8 million and you make 5% performance, like you were directly making that performance pay that drove that. And so you won. Your guy sitting next to you won, your helper won, the CSR won, the dispatcher won, the managers won. Like it becomes this really tight-knit team. And as we are hiring right now, because like I said, we are doing the integration for plumbing and everything and changing our model and doing all these kind of big moves, like that's super at front of mind. And we're being really intentional about, hey, this guy needs to be a cultural fit as well as like a good salesman and a good plumber and a good HVAC guy, because that's so important. It's crazy.
Yeah. And like, you know, if anybody ever comes and visits our place in a workshop, like we have some of our company goals on the wall. Like by 2030, we want to be at 100 million, which I think we're going to beat, which is fun.
Ooh, humble brag.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like over the next 12 months, my like personal goal is to get to a $2 million advertising spend, which means that we'll wrap up next year high 30s. So that's another 50%+ growth year back to back. I think it'll get tough to do the same thing after that. But I think that's a pretty strong pace. But people really resonate with that because they can imagine themselves as like, because their success is combined with the business success. So when when we get to our goal of 100 million, they will have succeeded personally along the way, which is a core value of ours. Like we want you to win individually and as a team, and we want you to pursue that.
How'd you come up with that 100 million? It's like one of those numbers, like the 1 million, 10 million, 100 million.
I was just on a show with Will Smith from Acquiring Minds, and I think we can make a huge difference in the community. I see how big of a difference we make now at 26. Like what could I do at four times that size? And two, like how many people have done it? I think this is like maybe a weird opinion, but I've been public about it. I was given the opportunity that I didn't deserve. Like I'm a Nepo baby. I wasn't given the company, but I bought it. But like, you know, when I was growing up in the trades, like hands on the tools, I was surrounded by other people whose dads were plumbers or dads were HVAC guys. And at 25, when I bought it, I had a tough time reconciling the fact that I had this opportunity that other people didn't. And my upbringing wasn't dramatically different. We all had daddies that were plumbers, right? And it wasn't that special. And I'm like, why did I get this? And they didn't. I wanted to earn the seat that I got. And so that turned into a bunch of different stuff of like, one, how do you share it? And that's how comp structure started like day one of me acquiring is like, how do I give people opportunities that like they did earn, but they didn't get a chance for equity, which is mainly like comp structures. And then how do we create this like self-fulfilling win where like everyone gets to win through the success of the business in a way that they earned, which I think is cool. And like, I want to have earned, which arguably I already have, but like, I want to have earned the opportunity that I got. And 100 million is like, to me, that's like, I know that I was the right person to get that opportunity. And I wasn't handed something silly because that would be a 100 times growth in 14 years. Or is that 1,000 times? It's a lot. I don't know many people who've done that.
Math isn't important in plumbing.
Yeah. And it's just a big, interesting challenge. Don't you just want to figure it out?
Respect. I mean, that is a huge number. Like 20 million is a big number. That's my goal. Like 10 to 20, but 20 being like the number. And I see the path. I mean, I think we'll get it in the next 5 years as well before 2030. We have a 3 to 5 year goal for 20 mil. But 100 mil just feels so daunting. That's not like 20 mil is obviously a reachable goal. You've reached it. So I know you can imagine reaching it. But from a perspective of like, there is such a big jump from 20 mil to 100 mil that I don't think people understand, like going from 150 staff to like 600 staff. Like that's so big, especially in, I mean, your guys' metro is big, but it's not like your Southern California. Like a lot of these Southern California, 100 mil, Austin, Texas, Dallas, Fort Worth area, even like Miami and some of those guys. Like it's such a big market and it's always so hot that from an HVAC plumbing side, you can build like Las Vegas, a monster. And so it just like people are listening to this going, well, 20 mil, 100 mil, like what's the difference? But it's just so such a big difference.
Yeah, I think it's a common funny argument that I see on Twitter of like what's harder. I think it used to get brought up because of Chris Hoffman. Chris is like wildly impressive and took a business from 10 million to 180 or whatever. And 140 in the core business, which is crazy. And I think people like are jealous or mad or whatever. So they tried to tear him down. And they're like, it's harder to go from 0 to 10 million than it is from 10 to 100. And I'm like, give me a human that's done the latter. I want to talk to them about that. Because everyone that's saying it is people that just never got to 10. And I think mm-hmm. they're just mad about it. And I just said this on Twitter the other day, but like getting from 1 to 10 is really difficult. Like it is crazy. It is very challenging, but it's emotionally challenging. Like you have to personally sacrifice. You have to not take any money mm-hmm. from the business. You have to reinvest everything. You have to spend all of your time doing this thing. It's like emotionally challenging and you need grit, but anyone can do it. It is inhuman to get to 100 million. And you know that because hardly anyone's done it.
There's a handful of corporations.
Yeah. Like hardly anyone's done it. And how many people do it owning all of it? And that sounds interesting to me.
That definitely is an interesting point. I mean, as a goal, just getting to build it that big is such a huge accomplishment. Yeah, I mean, there's a handful of $100 million home services companies, and most of them have done so backed by private equity. Like private equity comes in, they dump a bunch of money, and then that's how they get there. And that's a lot easier, at least in my mind, than somebody, you know, taking their modest salary and then just going back into the business and not getting strayed or pulled. I mean, I feel like a lot of times you get these people who get 7, 8, 9, 10 million and their cars start getting nicer and their second house shows up. I mean, I've told you from the beginning, 20 million's probably where I'd stop. I'm John, I'm your second house in Michigan friend. Like we'll fly to Denver together. I'll go on the, you know, first class and you can take your private jet. But you will still both get there. And because that's the difference, is it really is a huge jump.
Yeah. Really neat. And it's like, you know, what do you do with it? Which I don't like. I'm good. I'm still good. It hasn't been about the money for a few years. I really just think I like a big, interesting challenge. And this is a big, interesting challenge. And I want to earn. I want to earn it. I want to do something interesting. I want to build something meaningful. So it's sort of a tangent. But like, yeah, I think
that's cool.
I think getting to 100 is like, let's do it. And, you know, we went from 1 to 26. So like, I'm only talking about it 4 times at this point. That sounds a lot less intimidating.
We've already got a quarter of the way there.
Yeah, so. Dude, we just wrapped up a 26 times. I'm sure we can do a 4.
Dude, that's neat. Well, we'll have to see. I mean, we'll see in 6 months because, I mean, this whole freaking world changes so quick. I mean, in terms of like looking back a year, I had 2 employees and now I'm 15, 16.
Yeah.
So it really does J curve at some point and it starts ramping if you're doing things right.
For future reference, I think it's at 15 to 20 is where it starts to J curve, like harder.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, it's just going fast is all. I mean, it's, it feels like it's going quicker and quicker and quicker. Because you start getting momentum behind you, so not necessarily J-curving.
And then you place, like, the right people, mm-hmm. and then that adds more, yeah. Most of the biggest moves in the business have just been, like, placing the right person into the right seat. And I think some people, like, don't want to hear that, because they want to be, like, super process-driven, and they want to be like McDonald's, where, like, everyone's interchangeable. But Ray Kroc built McDonald's. Like, he wasn't interchangeable. And I don't even remember the other guy's name, but, like, he came up with the corporate leaseback thing. And, like, those aren't interchangeable roles. So, like, in that 15 to 20, like, when you're still building process and you're not fully dialed and you are putting in the key places and you're putting in the systems that, like, we talked about this a lot at the workshop, but decisions that we made at $2 and $3 million are still a big part of our life now. Being on Service Titan was a decision at $2 million. And how we handle fleet was made at $3 million. There was a few others that I talked about there, but like that happened, like we were 13 times smaller. And like those decisions were key.
In terms of difficulty though, do you think at some point the difficulty doesn't continue in the same way? So yeah, the beginning's emotionally draining. It's very hard. But at some point, right? So you have to break all your systems like 10, 15 times throughout this process. But like you said, you start setting these systems in place. So at 70 million, just arbitrary number. Do you think that there is an arbitrary number where after you hire C-suite, you hire president, whatever, VPs, and then you've put the right people in the right places that it becomes an easier game to get to that 100? Like the last 30 million doesn't feel as hard because you have the whole system built. And then now it's just pulling the right levers.
I mean, I think at each level, you have like, what's the one big challenge? And maybe it's at each year. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the one big challenge? Or what's the two big challenges? And we talk a lot about how I'm really intimidated by 50 million because I can see what breaks at 50 million. And those are intimidating challenges to me. But like something that we haven't talked a lot about is what happens in between now and 50. And for some reason, I'm not as intimidated by it. And I don't know why, but like, we're going to run out of a labor pool.
Yeah.
That's like a real challenge that we have to solve in the next 18 months. And that's going to happen before we hit 50. And that's like school. You know, we have to do the thing that all these giant companies do. We have to build a school.
Or some kind of training pipeline.
So we're projecting 35 hires, like headcount increase this year. And we have enough to do that in market, we think. Next year, let's say it's 50. And that gap of 15, we think is going to be the challenge. So we're trying to figure out how to do it. So all that to say, I think at every step, there's a big challenge. Because I think running out of labor would be a huge issue. You know, I used to think that I was like looking farther out and trying to solve those problems. And now I have to look even farther out and try to solve those problems. So, you know, the thing I'm intimidated by 50 million is like C-suite and VPs. You hire them or you uptrain them. So I have to look at my current team and be like, which of you can turn into VPs? Which of you can run your own internal $25 million company? And right now you're running a 4 or a 8 or a 12. That's a big adjustment.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't thought about it at all. I do not envy you on that one because that is a hard conversation to have. I mean, we're having department managers. So
yeah,
that's where we're at right now. But department managers are awesome. I love them.
Yeah, they are. You know, I've talked a lot on here about our movement from a 3-tier to a 4-tier org chart and like how that affects my role, but that affects everyone's role. So like our trade managers, which are like our operations managers of each trade, have gone from being frontline managers like service and install to in the last 6 months, just in the last 6 months, all three of them have stepped up a level where they're no longer directly managing techs. So now they're working through managers. And that's a really big adjustment for their careers. And they're figuring it out themselves. And like each of them is, two of them are managing 8-figure businesses inside our business. They're basically presidents of these lines.
Yeah.
We're trying to like train them to run it the same way we would if it was a siloed individual business, like all on its own. And like that's a challenge. One, I didn't see that coming the way I should have. And two, we didn't like arm them to do it well. So we're trying to catch up. But like, how do you think about training? Are you giving them enough information? Do they have net profit for their line? Do they know their marketing spend? Do they know all the different things that they can dial in on? And like, how do we support them? We're not dialed in on it, but I hope to this year.
This episode is sponsored by Service Scalers. They are a brand I've used personally. And after almost giving up on PPC altogether, I gave it one last shot with them. They were able to not only reduce my cost per click, but also drive consistent and high quality leads. If you are a home service company, they specialize in PPC and digital media just for you. I would highly recommend giving them a call today. This is a great conversation. So I said we bought the plumbing company And our plumbing man and division manager, yeah, or whatever you're going to call him, plumbing manager, he has 7 plumbers under him, which we'll eventually have to split out. But he sat there today and he goes, Jack, I don't know how to manage people, right? I'm used to just being a plumber and really good plumber and selling, going and selling jobs and doing this. And I said, you know, the goal is to train them into that position, the people below you, to be able to handle those individual items. And so it's funny because it sounds like that just continues, right? So you have to train them to not be a plumber, but to be a people manager, and to understand that we're going after KPIs and we're going after all these kind of specific goals, and to set those goals for them. And then it sounds like the next step, you just do that for the managers, managing managers, and then so far and so forth as you continue to grow. So really interesting that it's applicable through all sizes as you really go to the next levels. Obviously, the difficulty, I think, steps up a little bit. And the skill level?
I don't know. I think the most of the difficulty is in seeing the issue or like understanding it for what it is. And I guess I said most, but like the back half of that is like, do you have the right people? Because if you do, then you shouldn't have to be pushing. They should be seeking out personal development themselves because they can see themselves being leaders of 100 people. They're also eyeballing that 2 years in the future. And they're trying to make sure that, just like I was trying to prepare myself and be worthy of the opportunity that I was given, they're doing the same. Where, hey, I'm going to lead 100 people in my vertical in 2 years, and I have to be worthy of that. And so far, they've all done a great job of seeking out personal development to get there.
Yeah, it's definitely a higher achiever trait, I think, that you find within some people, is they will do whatever it takes to learn what they need to know to be able to get to the next level. Neat.
Yeah. That turned into a rant on how to get to 100 million, or like how maybe like the failings in between.
it's more interesting, like from my perspective, it's more, right, I'm drawing linear paths to the problems that you're having, we're having on a, I mean, much smaller. It sounds like you recycle your problems over and over again, but just into larger situations that are higher stakes, much higher stakes.
Yeah. Yes. But one thing that I'm finding very fun about this size is that when you get a high stake problem, you do have budget to solve it. And that is a very new thing for me. That is very new. We're like, hey, I need this expert. And like most of my life, it's I need this expert. And then I just sort of like wistfully stare off and imagine what that life could look like. And now if we need an expert, like for the first time, we can pay like market or above for like real expert roles, which is just like a totally new experience for us. So like we're interviewing some candidates now that for positions that I've never in my life imagined having.
Generalists to specialists.
To experts. Yeah.
To absolute specialists. I don't even want to talk about this, John. This is so
okay, unfair. I'm sorry.
It's such bullshit. I can hire a TikTok guru, marketing guru, to solve my TikTok marketing problem, and I can hire this guy and this guy, and I'm over here like, Jack still wears half of these.
Something that's been like, it's cliche, but there's a book about this, and I'm saying this, and I don't think I'm saying this from like my size pedestal.
Okay. Fully. That's a great way to start this, by the way.
Fully. Like, a portion of it is. But
okay, lay it on us.
Yeah. So the book is called Who Not How. Have you read it?
No.
It's interesting. And like, honestly, the title sums it up. Down. Like, it's not much more complicated than that. But the basic idea is like most of my life, I've spent figuring out how to do something instead of figuring out who is the right human to do this thing. And that's been something I've been working on a lot over the past 4 or 5 months. I can figure out how to do something. But the problem is I'm pulled in so many different directions. Like me knowing how to do something is irrelevant. Like I'm not going to be able to build real scalable process because I don't have the time to devote to it. So like it doesn't matter if I know how to run an accounting team, if I have to like actually run the business and not the accounting team, or like marketing, or like any core function of the business. So something that we've been really focusing on, and that's why moving from this generalist to specialist to expert has been a big thing for us recently, is because I'm really trying to dial in on like, okay, I want to do this thing. So I want to do field canvassing, or I want to do home shows, or I want to do, I don't know, what's another thing?
Door knocking.
Yeah, well, that's field canvassing. But like, I'm trying to think of a non-marketing one. Vendor relationships. Like, I'm really like worked up about vendor relationships right now. Because I want to be a good partner. Like, I want to be, we rely on our vendors and we're a big source of their growth. So when I think about these positions, I used to just like, okay, let's go create a process. Let's go do this thing. And what has helped J-curve us even faster is me skipping the learning phase. So home shows is a great example. We're thinking about home shows. We're thinking about in-person marketing and like how to make that happen. And it would not be very hard to sink into like a execution mind. We're like, okay, let's do this. And you're going to go do this. And you're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
Instead, it's like, how do I just pay somebody a lot of money who knows exactly how to do this, like way better in a way that it would take us years to figure out. And they can shorten our learning curve by literally years and make this productive day one. Because like their salary will pay for itself. Not even in like save time, but like in real leads, like it'll actually just pay for itself.
I mean, do you think that's always the case though? Or is always realistically the case? Home shows, is there someone that's going to get you so many orders of magnitude farther than sending somebody that's already in-house and saving money? What is the order of magnitude that's going to change, right? 10 leads, 15 leads, 20 leads that you close 50% on. What is that real difference versus sending, you know, one of your, an assistant of some sort or a assistant marketing person here or there, social media person.
Yeah. Right?
The social media person pulls off, goes to that, is a generally a friendly person, good at sales, sells 10 leads. What are you expecting in terms of order of magnitude that this specialist for the home shows is going to actually generate?
Like multiples.
Yeah, like 3x.
If not more. Yeah. And we're seeing this in every position that we've moved up a rank. So you go from generalist to specialist, then you go from specialist to expert.
Mm-hmm.
And I think expert to world class is maybe what's after that. And the order of magnitude is ridiculous. But I guess the way I think about this is everyone says that they want to put the right person in the right seat. Everybody says it. And like, show me your org chart. Did you actually put the right person in the right seat? And like what you just described is not putting the right person in the right seat. But I bet you would say like, hey, we're going to put the right people in the right seat. So like your actions aren't meeting your words in this case. Could be budget, could be like any reason. That's not like me throwing stones. It's just like that's not words living up to actions. And we thought about this because we started like that's our tendency. Oh, let's figure out how to execute. Let's figure out how to go do this thing that John wants to do. And I just sort of watched one of our L10s as I was watching the team start to pull together how to execute on this. You know, one of the marketing coordinators was like, okay, I'm going to do this part of it. And then somebody else said, okay, here's how I'm going to contribute. And as I'm watching this, all I'm seeing is like distraction from people's core competencies that they are already in the right seats on to learn something that they have no idea that will take us months to suss out and has an unproven thing. And then what I'm seeing is like, because it's not going to go well, because we don't know what we're doing, we're going to lose on two fronts. We're going to lose where we were, like what we were already doing good at. And then we're going to lose at the thing we're experimenting on, which is going to make us like, that's a double whammy. Yeah. We put a kibosh to it and started recruiting.
Yeah. I mean, in theory, well, not in theory, in practice for you, it sounds like it's a excellent strategy. What I'm trying to understand in my mind is when is that feasible? I mean, it's feasible day one. And so like, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here and I'm having a hard time because, for example, our third hire was a comfort advisor.
Yeah.
It was me, two techs and a comfort advisor. And everyone was like, don't hire a comfort advisor yet. But that comfort advisor was so good at selling.
I know. Yeah.
That it was able. And that's what she was the best at, like getting in a house and selling an HVAC unit. And that was able to drive significant like business. Like I wouldn't be where I am today without her. 100%.
Yeah.
Not even close. And so like in my mind, I know that's it's a truth. I'm just trying to wrap my head around like how do you... From an implementation process on like every front, it seems overwhelming at our size. but maybe the idea isn't, it's not to do it on every front. It is to do partial. And then as you grow, you really pick the strategic ones. And then by the end.
You know, what we talked about in the workshop is like, I mean, there is a way to execute this badly. You know, like a way that I could execute this badly right now is I could say my IT is difficult. So we have 500 devices and IT is complicated. So I'm going to go hire 100,000 base, no bonus IT person to keep my IT moving in the direction that I need. I think that would be a mistake on a lot of fronts. I don't know, maybe I'll disagree with myself in 6 months, but like most of the time I get a lot freer if it's a revenue driver.
That's what I was just going to say. Maybe that's the caveat, is it has to be a revenue driving position or like a leads driving position.
Or is it going to unlock a constraint that does the same thing? A ridiculous baller recruiter would provide a similar benefit.
Speaking of that, if you are a ridiculous baller recruiter in the Nashville region or wanting to move to Nashville, give me a call or send me a DM, because that's our next hire is.
Yeah.
Except you will probably be a generalist in HR and recruiting for just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. But like that's going to unlock capacity that's going to lead to revenue. Someone's going to go hire you technicians, and they're going to go do whatever. Another one that's not as obvious but absolutely leads to revenue is call center manager. And like when to bring on that call center manager or call center leader. If you bring on the wrong person, they're not going to understand very well how to drive revenue through call center and like what their tie is. So like keeping the board full, what actions to take. And that's a big deal, because like the right one moves the business and the wrong one does nothing or moves backwards. So some of these hires we've overinvested in at a time when like when I first looked at that role, I was like, that's going to be a tough nut to crack. But repeatedly, like where now I don't question it as much over the past just like 9 to 12 months, this has been a big lesson for me that like if I think I need someone, then I want to hire the best someone almost regardless of cost, almost. Because I know that like they will pay for themselves in 30 days. The ROI is ridiculous. Whereas every time I tried to cheap, not good.
Yeah. I mean, I think we see this too, right? We see this with agency sometimes, and we see this with different people try to just pick up an agency to do all their marketing, and it just net like Scorpion, Thrive, all these, and sorry, Scorpion, Thrive, if you're listening, but
I'm not, you know, do better.
They try to be these generalists and they put, you know, generalists in these positions that are essentially just button clickers. They turn it on, turn it off. And then they're not really doing the strategy that it takes. SEO is a great example too. It's like hiring a full-time SEO person that's really like driving SEO moves the bus. And I think we talked about in the workshop versus, you know, you go hire an agency, which is not the right person in the right spot, and they're doing 2 articles a month. Like you're not driving SEO value at 2 articles a month. I'm sorry. You know, I love SEO guys. But it's just, it's not there when somebody in the Philippines, and even those people overseas might not be the right person, but they're still able to generate 10 articles or 15 articles a month at half the cost. And so I do think that there is some truth to that. And it definitely isn't, or half isn't, from your pedestal, your size pedestal.
Yeah, some of them are, and I'll receive that. Like how I think about my head of accounting is probably not something that we're all on the same page about. But like how we think about someone who's going to drive leads, I don't care what size business you are. Like if someone's driving 20 to 40 leads a week, we could all use 20 to 40 leads a week.
Yep. Techs are in the same category.
Yeah. The budget is the same. Yeah.
If you have someone that can sell units or sell HVAC or sell, you know, a water heater, send them to all the water heater calls. They're getting every single water heater call imaginable.
Yeah.
And I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it really does. So. Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. The phrase that I kept using at the workshop, and I'll use it here, is scaling a business is just turning specialists or generalists to specialists over and over and over. And I think we just continue to see that. And then now inserting experts, the deeper we get. But who not how, recommend it, could help you break the cycle. Because I think it's very tempting to immediately try to figure out the tactical instead of taking a step back and being like, this is a deep skill set where if we do this, we can move the needle. And if we do this wrong, it's a waste of time and energy. Do we have the right human on the bus to run with this.
I think that's so good, man. Because I think especially high achievers are used to, and business owners specifically are generally high achieving individuals.
Yeah.
And that is a hard skill. We just want to figure it out and do it ourselves because that's what we've always done, at least speaking for me personally. But it's a good point. I think that's the same growth that we talked about for, you know, our plumbers going into management roles and our managers yep. going into managing manager roles. It really is the same topic. This was interesting today. We kind of went, you know, wall to wall on this one, but good conversation. I loved it.
Yeah. I'm fascinated to see what Kristen titles it.
Good luck, Kristen.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Jack's chainsaw background.
Well, thanks for tuning in to Own and Operate It. Thanks for listening to our ramblings today as we talked about a meandering chat on how to get big. If you like what you heard, well, give us a 5-star review. Help us out. Helps other people discover us. Helps make us popular on one section of the internet. And go to ownedandoperated.com. Sign up for the newsletter where we talk about more stuff. And check out the workshop, too. That was a lot of fun. And people really got a ton from it. So that was really cool. And we're going to do a few of these a year. Like we're thinking 2 or 3. So next one is June 4th to the 6th. And it was awesome.
Sweet. Yeah, really fun.
Thanks for tuning in to Owned and Operated, the podcast for home service entrepreneurs. If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit the like button and subscribe to the podcast. If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to cover, feel free to reach out. You can find me on Twitter at Wilson Companies. I'll see you next time.